So again, we're beginning Perek Aleph Mishnah Dalet and Pirkei Avos. Last week we read about Antigonus Ishtzalcha, where we talked about the gradual assimilation that was taking place in Klal Yisrael at that time. The Jews in Eretz Yisrael were under the influence of Hellenism at that time. We said to such an extent that even the Gadol Hadar, you know, had a name Antigonus, right, which was just symbolic of how thoroughly Hellenism was seeping into the Jewish people. We see even more evidence of that with the Mishnah we're going to see today. So the Mishnah tells us, Yosi ben Yoezer ish Tzreda, Yosi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim kiblu mehem. Yosi ben Yoezer from Tzreda and Yosi ben Yochanan from Yerushalayim received the tradition from them, meaning from Antigonus, and before him from Shimon HaTzadik. So this is the first time where the bearers of the Mesorah are described as being pairs. In other words, previously we had Moshe Rabbeinu, Yehoshua, then a group called the Zekenim, a group called the Nevi'im, a group called the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, then once again individuals, Shimon HaTzadik, Antigonus Ishtzalcha, and now all of a sudden the Mesorah, as it's passed on to the next generation, becomes the possession or the responsibility of two individuals. And we'll see that this trend is going to continue through the next few Mishnayos. So we have Yosi ben Yoezer and Yosi ben Yochanan. And then in Mishnah Vav, we have Yoshua ben Prachya and Nitai Ha'arbeli. In Ches, Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach. In Yud, Shmaya and Avtalion. And in Yudbeis, the most famous of these pairs, Hillel and Shammai, received the tradition, they received the Mesorah from those who had come previously. This period in Jewish history is referred to as the period of the Zugos. The Zugos, literally the pairs. Because at every time during this portion of Jewish history, the leadership of Klal Yisrael was in the hands of a pair of Talmidei Chachamim. Two Talmidei Chachamim at the head of the people, leading them. We're told in the Mishnah Chagiga that of these pairs, one of them was the Nasi, the president of the Sanhedrin, of the body of the Supreme Court, and the other was the Av Beis Din, which was sort of like the vice president in terms of running the Sanhedrin. So in our particular case, Yosi ben Yoezer was the Nasi, Yosi ben Yochanan was the Av Beis Din, Yeshua ben Prachya was the Nasi, Nitai Bailey was the Av Beis Din, and so on and so forth. What's the significance of the fact that Jewish life now has passed into the rule of Zugos, that there is a pair of Talmidei Chachamim who are at the helm of the Jewish people in terms of passing on the Mesorah? So the truth is, and this point again is made by Rav Soloveitchik in his comments on the Mishnah, the truth is, this is not necessarily a good thing. In what sense? The Mishnah Masechta Chagiga tells us that it was at this point in Jewish history that for the first time there was a machlokas, there was a debate between different chachamim. Up until this point in Jewish history, basically the Mesorah meant passing on information from one generation to the next, and occasionally the chachamim would make new rules. But there was no sense of machlokas or of differences of opinion, disagreements, because the Mesorah up until this point was so clear, there wasn't really anything to fight about. Everybody knew what the Mesorah was. There was everybody came to shul, they all davened the same nusach, you know, they all did things, you know, basically the same. And there wasn't a sense of machlokas, you know, you do it this way, I do it that way, my Rav says this, your Rav says that. With Yosi ben Yoezer and Yosi ben Yochanan, is the first time we ever have a machlokas in Klal Yisrael. So what was the machlokas about? A machlokas in halacha in Klal Yisrael. Machlokas in other areas in Klal Yisrael has been there since the very beginning. But machlokas in halacha, you know, the first time we have it is with the Zugos.
Well, because of the fact that they were more dispersed.
Right.
They, until now, they were all in the same place.
Right, right. So what? Right, there was more machlokas. So what exactly was the machlokas? So the truth is, the machlokas can be titled the Great Smicha Controversy. But not the Smicha Controversy the way we've thought of it in other contexts in Jewish history. Smicha, in addition to meaning rabbinic ordination, also means the act of laying one's hands on top of a karbon when one brings that karbon to the Beis HaMikdash. So there was a machlokas as to whether it was appropriate to do smicha on Yom Tov when you brought a karbon to the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Tov. Maybe smicha was the sort of thing that should not be done on Yom Tov for various reasons. So this was an ongoing dispute. Yossi ben Yoezer saying you shouldn't do smicha, Yossi ben Yochanan saying you should do smicha, and this was a point of contention throughout all of the zugos. One side said you should do smicha, the other side said you shouldn't do smicha. Now again, in the vast scope of things, we know that today there are many, many more halachic disputes in Klal Yisrael than just the narrow question of whether you do smicha on a karbon on Yom Tov, but this was the beginning of a new era in Klal Yisrael, where what it meant was the Mesorah was not as clear as it was in previous generations. And it seems like, to reflect the fact that there were now differences of opinion, you know, there's this Rav and that Rav, so the era of leadership passed, the mantle of leadership passed from a single Gadol Hadar who was in charge of everything, to this double system where you had a Nasi and an Av Beis Din, already reflecting the fact that there were some people who were Hasidim of this Rav and other people who were Hasidim of that Rav. And, you know, there was a little bit of a bifurcation which began to take place in Klal Yisrael. We can attribute that, as Rebbetzin Hefler pointed out before, we could attribute that to the growing influences of Hellenism on Klal Yisrael. Because the more the Jewish people assimilated, the more the Jewish people became interested in a worldview which was not organically their own, the less scrupulous people were about maintaining the Mesorah, and the more cracks began to develop in the Mesorah, in the tradition, where now there was at least a question where we're not sure. And some could look at it this way, some could look at it that way, but we lost that sense of uniformity, of where we feel sure and confident about every point in the Mesorah. And as we know, looking forward to today, it only got worse from there, where, you know, there's so many things in Halacha and even in Hashkafa that we're not 100% sure about. You know, we have different voices within Klal Yisrael saying, you know, different things. That begins with this time, with the period of the Zugos. It was also a period of time in which there was tremendous persecution of the Jewish people. And this is actually very relevant to Hanukkah, which is coming up. When Alexander the Great conquered the Persian Empire and brought Eretz Yisrael under Greek rule, so Alexander the Great was benevolent to the Jews. And the truth is, as much as his heirs, you know, who brought Hellenism to Eretz Yisrael, as much as the Hellenism had a detrimental spiritual impact on Klal Yisrael, physically the Jews were left alone. It was the attitude of the Hellenists always was, we have a better product than the Jews, but we are tolerant, we are liberal, we are open-minded, we're not going to force you to do anything. If you want to keep doing your old-fashioned religion, that's your business, but, you know, we're not going to force you to do anything. We know in the period of time right before the Maccabean rebellion, the revolt of the Hashmonaim, all of that changed. And we know that Antiochus famously put a series of anti-Jewish decrees into place, where the Jewish people in many cases were not allowed to practice their religion, and if they did so, in many cases they were going to be punishable by death. That period of time, right before the rebellion of the Hashmonaim, is the period of time in which Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan live. And in particular, Chazal tell us some very sad things about Yossi ben Yoezer, Ish Tzreda, the Tana whose words are discussed in this particular Mishnah. He, of course, was a Gadol Hadar, But the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra that he had a son who did not follow the right path, meaning he went down the path of assimilation and Hellenism. And Yossi ben Yoezer basically disowned this son and did not give him any of his inheritance. That's the Gemara tells us in passing in Bava Basra. As if that wasn't bad enough, the Medrash in Brachos Rabbah records a really depressing, very, very difficult story about how Yossi ben Yoezer was condemned to death by the Hellenistic authorities. Again, this seems to be in the period of time right before the Maccabees rebelled against the Hellenists, and people were put to death for following their religion. So we're told as follows. Yossi ben Yoezer had a nephew by the name of Yochum Ish Tzroros, and the Medrash tells us that as Yossi ben Yoezer, the subject of our Mishnah, was being taken out to be hung, quote unquote, which probably means crucified, right? They were taking him out to kill him. So it was on a Shabbos, and Yochum Ish Tzroros, his own nephew, was riding on a horse on Shabbos in the proximity of Yossi ben Yoezer, and he had the following lovely words to say to his uncle right before his uncle was about to be executed. Yochum said to Yossi ben Yoezer, "Look at the horse that my master has given me to ride on, and look at the horse that your master has given you to ride on," pointing to the gallows or to the cross, which was going to be the final resting place of Yossi ben Yoezer. Rabbi Yossi said back to Yochum, to his nephew, "Im kein l'machisav, my faith is not moved at all, my faith is not shaken by what I know is going to happen in the next couple of minutes. If this is the way that God rewards those who anger him," meaning people like you, who anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu, get rewarded in such a way, you're parading around on this fancy horse that was given to you by your Hellenistic masters, if that's how God rewards those who anger him, kal v'chomer la'osei ritzono, how much more so is God going to reward those who do his will? Now, the irony of that statement is not lost on the nephew. So the nephew says back to Yossi ben Yoezer, "V'osa adam ritzono yoser mimcha? Can you think of anyone who did God's will more so than you, my dear uncle? Things are not looking very good for you right about now." So responds Yossi ben Yoezer, "Im la'osei ritzono kach, if this is the punishment that befalls those who do his will, kal v'chomer l'machisov, how much more so are those who anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu going to be punished in a terrible way?" And at that point they haul off Yossi ben Yoezer, and he's executed for, again, whatever it was, teaching Torah, observing mitzvahs, you know, fill in the blank. We're not told exactly what the crime was, but we have a pretty good sense of whatever the crime might have been. So says the Medrash, fascinatingly, that these words of Yossi ben Yoezer penetrated the heart of his nephew, Yochum, like a snake venom. That's the Lashon in Brachos Rabbah. And this Yochum decided that he sinned and he needs to repent. So what does he do? He goes and kills himself using a manner of suicide that reflects all four of the capital punishments of Beis Din. Again, without going into the gory details. And the Medrash concludes that Yossi ben Yoezer, who, again, apparently had not died yet at this point, right? So they bring him out. Again, if it was the cross, they put him up on the cross, and he hadn't died yet. If he was hanged, you know, again, he was waiting to be hanged, whatever it was. So Yossi ben Yoezer had a vision, and he saw the coffin of his nephew flying in the air, headed towards Gan Eden. And Yossi ben Yoezer said, again, apparently to the people who must have been gathered around, that's how we know the story, Yossi ben Yoezer said, "I see that my nephew has made it into Gan Eden. even before I've made it there. In other words, he so thoroughly did tshuva and repented his terrible ways that, you know, he went straight to Gan Eden, you know, in such a fashion. What we take away, I mean, there are a number of things that we take away from the story, but one of the things we take away from the story is that Hellenism was so rampant that even Yossi ben Yoezer, the Gadol Hadar, who is executed because of his commitment to Torah u'mitzvos, has a son who is, you know, goes off the derech, so to speak, has a nephew who not only goes off the derech, but is really like a really nasty nephew. I mean, really, really nasty. You know, you need to be a pretty nasty person to go alongside your uncle as he's about to be executed and say things along the line of, see, I told you so, you know, that these kind of things would happen to you. It wasn't a nice guy. But, you know, that just seems to be typical of what's going on in Klal Yisrael at this particular time. We've seen already the Masorah is starting to break up. We're having questions about the Masorah. Klal Yisrael is being persecuted. Even people from the families of the Gedolei Hador are going over to a secular and a Hellenistic perspective on the world. This is a nation in crisis. And the truth is, realizing this helps us appreciate the story of Hanukkah that much more, because ultimately it's this state of affairs which causes the Hashmonaim to stand up and rebel against the Hellenists who were in charge in Eretz Yisrael at that time. And we have a sense of what would have been had the Maccabees not rebelled. In other words, we would have been left with, you know, Gedolei Hador being killed for their beliefs, children defecting left and right, cracks in the Masorah that probably would have gotten even bigger. You know, we appreciate that the Maccabees really turned back the clock in a very, very real way. Right. So there. Don't try this at home. There is a whole literature about how, although we typically discourage suicide, there is a literature about how suicide that's undertaken as a form of repentance. In other words, I realize that I have sinned so grievously that I am subject to capital punishment, so I will kill myself as a fulfillment of that. There is a literature that sees that as being, you know, something very exemplary, very, very, you know, a positive thing in terms of, you know, recapturing, you know, doing tshuva and recapturing your good name. Again, we're not recommending this to anybody, but again, we should be aware of the fact, you know, that there are certain circumstances where the halacha does look positively on suicide. You know, again, with the very, very severe caveat that those are exceptions rather than the rule. And, you know, certainly as a general rule, we do not encourage that. But that's what's going on over there. So against this whole backdrop, I mean, we have the sense of a Jewish community which is falling apart at the seams on every level. The Jews are being persecuted for observing Torah mitzvahs. People are defecting. The Masorah is collapsing. So keep that in our minds as we're about to read what Yossi ben Yoezer has to say to try to address a phenomena of Yiddishkeit that seems to be falling apart at the seams all around everybody. So what does he say? Yossi ben Yoezer ish Sreda Omer. So this martyr, Yossi ben Yoezer, who gave up his life for Torah mitzvos, he says, Yehi beis cha beis vad l'chachamim. Your house should be a gathering place for chachamim, for sages. Vehevei misabek ba'afar raglehem. You should sit in, that's the way our school translates it, literally you should roll in the dust of their feet. They have a shosei b'tzama es divrayem, and you should drink in the words of the Chachamim with thirst. So that's it. I mean, that's the great piece of advice to deal with a society which is collapsing at the seams. You know, hang out with Talmidei Chachamim. that's gonna cure everything. I mean, it was good advice, you know, but it seems so simple and pariv that you wonder how that is going to be the, you know, the panacea, the answer that's gonna, you know, take away all of the problems that are surrounding Klal Yisrael at this time. So perhaps we can suggest as follows. Again, just to try to understand how this teaching from Yossi ben Yoezer is so powerful and so addressed all of the tremendous, tremendous problems which were present in Klal Yisrael at that particular time. As we mentioned, Yossi ben Yoezer lives in a time where there's a lack of respect for Torah. Says Yossi ben Yoezer, you know what, not the solution, I mean there is no simple solution, but at least part of a solution. You know what part of the solution is? The Chachamim have to be part of your household. It's not enough to respect Talmidei Chachamim out there, because if you view the Talmidei Chachamim as people who are out there, who are removed from your household, who are not part of your daily existence, so you can speak about them with reverence, but then your children know that the atmosphere in your own home is not suffused with the atmosphere of Torah and respect for Talmidei Chachamim. Says Yossi ben Yoezer, the most important thing which we have right now is to make sure that our children stay on the path of Torah. And again, as we see, he speaks from very, very bitter experience. His son goes off the derech, his nephew goes off the derech. Again, there are no guarantees for anything. But what can we do, says Yossi ben Yoezer, to try to ensure that the next generation is going to remain loyal to Torah? Bring Chachamim into your house. Because if you bring Chachamim into your house, if your kids come home from school one day, and what's going on? There's a shir going on in our house. We invited Rabbi so-and-so to come give a shir. Yeah, he comes every Wednesday night and gives a shir here in the house. It changes the entire environment of the home. Torah is not just something out there. Torah becomes something which is in here. And again, if we read the words very carefully, we see that's what Yossi ben Yoezer is advising. Yehi beischa beisvad l'chachamim. Let your house be a gathering place for the chachamim. Don't just go out to a shir. What's that?
You read all for the boss.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Right, exactly.
An era where nobody knew anything.
Right, and they brought Talmidei Chacham into the house. I mean, that's one of the things that happened over there. Right, exactly. It's a wonderful thing. I used to joke that All for the Boss would be a great title for a book about marriage. But, you know, they took the title already for something else. So, but that, you know, Rabbi Herman has described in All for the Boss does exactly that. You know, where Baruch Ber comes from Europe, you know, we run out to the hotel where he's staying to invite him to come into the house, right? I mean, just to give one example. So that's what Yossi ben Yoezer is saying as well. It's not just enough to go out to a shir. It's not just enough to go out to the Beis Medrash. Bring the Beis Medrash into your house, and then you have a fighting chance to try to influence your own family. We have to start with our own families. If our own family is loyal to Torah, so then we have a chance. If our own families are not going to be loyal to Torah, if our own children are going to leave the derech of Torah, so then what's going to be for the next generation? The only approach to try to keep everyone on the straight and narrow is to bring the Torah into our house. So how do we do that? So part of the key to that is the second phrase over here. Vehevim is abek ba'afar raglehem. Literally roll in the dust of their feet. Now, on the simplest of levels, this means that we should pay careful attention to the words that the Chachamim, who we've brought into our house, are saying. We should show them tremendous deference, right? In other words, roll around at the dust that is at their feet. But there's another idea over here, which is brought out by Rav Chaim Volozhin in his Ruach Chaim commentary on Pirkei Avos, and it's a very beautiful idea, and it's related to the Parshas HaShavua from the Fair Shabbos. Writes Rav Chaim Volozhin, Misabek, having Misabek Ba'afar Ragleim, is related to a word we had in this past week's Sedra, Vayeyovek Ish Imo, at Alos Hashochai. Yaakov Avinu was left alone, and a man wrestles with him until dawn. The famous fight that Yaakov Avinu has with the Malach. The term for wrestling is vayeyavik. The same word is misabik ba'afar ragleyim. So says Reb Chaim Volozhin, the way to translate the phrase over here in Pirkei Avos is you should wrestle at the dust of the feet of the Chachamim. What's wrestling? Wrestling at the dust of the feet of the Chachamim? What exactly are we talking about? So, explains Reb Chaim Volozhin, learning, when you really learn well, it's like a milchama. It's like a war. You put two chavrusas together, if they're a good chavrusa shaft, and, you know, if you've ever seen the scene, so a really good chavrusa shaft very often can involve one guy screaming at the other guy, and literally looking like he wants to rip the guy to shreds. That's what you see, a really successful chavrusa. You know, Reuven is screaming at Shimon, Shimon is screaming at Reuven, and, you know, they look like they're about to pummel one another. And that's the sign that they're really learning very often. Sometimes it's the sign they just like to scream. But often it's the sign that they're really learning. Why? Because the passion that they invest in wrestling with one another and wrestling with the sugya, wrestling with what they're learning and trying to figure out the emes, the truth of what the particular Torah text has to share in that particular case, that's how they come to the truth. And the Gemara famously says that, you know, you can have a father and a son who are sitting and learning together with that kind of passion, a Rebbe and a Talmud, you can have two chavrusas, and when they start learning, they're like enemies. When they finish learning, they're like friends. Because the point was not that, you know, they want to be enemies with one another, but each one is bringing their own perspective on the Torah that they're learning, they're bringing it with passion. And because they struggle and they wrestle with one another, that's how they're ultimately able to come to the truth. Says Reb Chaim Volozhin in explaining Yossi ben Yoezer, having misabeg ba'afar ragleyim, it's not just enough to bring in the Chachamim into your house. And don't just, you know, when they give a shiur, don't just sit there and nod, very nice, very nice, very nice, very nice. Fight back! You don't necessarily have to take this personally, but fight back, ask questions, challenge, try to push back at whatever the Rebbe is trying to present. Because the truth is, the more you push back and the more you ask questions and the more that you try to, you know, come up with a different perspective, the more everyone is ultimately going to be able to gain from the experience. Now, there's a very beautiful pshat in Misabeg ba'afar ragleyim. And if you go back to the historical context which we provided earlier, it fits with the time of Yossi ben Yoezer. Because if you think about it, before the emergence of Machlokes, Torah study must have looked like something very, very different. This whole vision, this whole image that we just portrayed right now of the chavrusas sitting down together, one screaming at the other, trying to figure out what pshat is in the Gemara or the Tosfos or whatever it happens to be, that only makes sense once there's really machlokas in Klal Yisrael. In the earlier stages of the transmission of the Torah Shel Baal Peh, everything was just passed on. There was no machlokas. Everybody sat in shir, and the Rebbe said, it's A, B, and C, and everybody took notes. They said, it's A, B, and C, and weiter, and they just went on. And, you know, they learned more and more information, but there wasn't this sense of machlokas that we have to fight with one another to try to get to the truth. In other words, Yossi ben Yoezer is addressing what's really a new phenomena on the Torah learning scene at that time. Up until his time, they didn't really have a phenomena of machlokas. They didn't have these chavrusas being misabek, wrestling with one another. Says Yossi ben Yoezer, the key to preserving Torah in these times is A, bring the Torah into your homes. B, be prepared to fight with passion over the understanding of Torah. We may have lost the sense of clarity that we had in the Masorah before, but we can compensate for that loss of clarity with an abundance of passion. We may not have had the same passion before because we had so much clarity. It was so easy. You know, the Rebbe just says what it is, and that, okay, that's what it is. Now that we don't understand, we have to invest passion in trying to learn, the sense of machlokas, of fighting with one another, l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, in order to understand the truth. So that will be the key to help preserve the Masorah into the next generation. Finally, have a shosev et sama es divrayim, drink in the words of Torah thirstily, says Reb Chaim Volozhin. It doesn't say have a shosev kivid sama, you know, drink in the words of Torah as if you were thirsty. It says drink in the words of Torah with thirst, meaning it's not just that you learn Torah feeling like you're thirsty, like you want. It's not a simile. It's in actuality, the person really has to feel, if I don't get Torah, I won't be satisfied. It's that sense of urgency for Torah that has to be instilled in the next generation if we're going to be able to survive this onslaught of Hellenism. Truth be told, the advice of Yossi ben Yoezer is very, very similar to what Gedolei Torah proposed, you know, during the 19th century, when so much of world Jewry was being swept up by Reform and Haskalah and other movements within Klal Yisrael. You know, the challenge that faced the, you know, the observant Jews at that time was how to make Torah attractive when there were so many other things out there that were being portrayed as more attractive. Again, it's hard for us to, I don't know about you. I mean, once upon a time, Bachrim was sitting in yeshiva in the 19th century, and they were attracted to Russian literature. You know, they weren't, you know, somebody, again, without naming names, but, you know, they weren't into learning Torah. They wanted to read Tolstoy. I don't know, you go to anybody today, I mean, whether they're, you know, one of the bigger Yetzer Haras that Klal Yisrael has today is not necessarily to read Tolstoy. You know, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just, you know, different. That's not what pulls people away from a Torah lifestyle today. But the sense was that Torah doesn't have what it takes to intellectually compete with these other disciplines, with literature, with philosophy, you know, you name it. You know, Torah is impoverished vis-a-vis these other disciplines. And the answer which was given by the Gedolim of the 19th century was, okay, let's make Torah study scintillating in a way that can be on par with these other disciplines. Again, it's not by accident that the so-called Brisker Derech emerged in the 19th century, you know, which took a more conceptual approach to Limud HaTorah than had been in vogue before. That way of learning, which was opposed by some of the Gedolim, the Marcheshes, you know, one of the great Dayanim in Vilna prior to the war, referred to the Brisker Derech as chemistry, and he meant it disparagingly. You know, it's just, you know, that's not learning. You know, that's some kind of scientific approach that you have to trying to understand the sugya. But Lemaisa, that conceptual approach to learning was intellectually challenging. And for many people, that saved them for learning, because they felt a passion and an excitement in learning that, you know, they thought up until that point they would only be able to get through disciplines that were removed from Torah study. So in a similar sense, that's how Yossi ben Yoezer could be understood. Introduce the element of passion, of having misabek ba'afar ragleyem, right? You should wrestle in the words of Torah, because that provides a certain intellectual stimulation, a certain excitement. And drink the words of Torah thirstily. Don't just, okay, you know, it's another shir, I learned this, I learned that, but have a passion, have an excitement, have a sense that if I don't get Torah, I will be impoverished. If you can develop that, that can be a counterweight to the attraction of Hellenism and all of the disciplines that the Hellenists thought were all important to the exclusion of Torah. You know, this way we can say that we have something within our own heritage which is equal, at least equal, you know, to all of those other disciplines, that we can encourage people to stay loyal to the path of Torah through our understanding of the sophistication that Torah has to offer. That's the message Yossi ben Yoezer offered, and it's the message that has resonated throughout the generations whenever there was a threat to Klal Yisrael's fidelity to the Torah. Let me just add one more thing, because Hanukkah is coming up. The as we've pointed out, the main piece of advice that Yossi ben Yoezer gives to the people of his generation as to how to preserve Torah is bring the Chachamim into your bayis. If you can maintain the integrity of the bayis of the house, you know, you can show your children that that Talmidei Chachamim are literally in our house, that Torah is in our house. So that will be the chinuch that they will receive, and they'll have a better chance of staying on the Derech HaTorah later on. So first of all, on that statement, Reb Chaim Voloshin beautifully comments, how do we do this nowadays? He says, Hinei al yidei hasfarim asher bevoteinu, boteinu hu beisvad l'chachamim eilef. You should know that Yossi ben Yoezer, although he meant literally that we should bring flesh and blood, live Talmidei Chacham into our houses, he didn't only mean that. Says Reb Chaim Voloshin, if you have Sfarim in your house, and I would add, and you learn from the Sfarim, right? Not just that they look pretty on the shelf, right? But if you have Sfarim in the house and you learn from those Sfarim, so that's the fulfillment of Yehi Beischa Beisvad L'Chachamim. Let your house be a gathering place for scholars. The scholars don't necessarily have to be alive, right? If you have a Rabbi Akiva Eiger on your shelf, so in a sense, Rabbi Akiva Eiger himself is in your house, right? If you have a Rambam on your shelf, so in a sense, the Rambam is in your house. It's not in the fullest sense of the term. Obviously, it doesn't mean that there isn't a milah to bringing flesh and blood Talmidei Chacham into the house, as Yossi ben Yoezer says. But, you know, we should know that even if you can't host a shir, but having Sfarim in the house, having people learn the Sfarim, you know, having people learn the Sfarim in the presence of their children, so that makes a tremendous roshim, a tremendous impact on the people in the house, and, you know, it's a modern-day fulfillment of this idea. More than that, we noted that it was not long after this Mishnah was composed that the rebellions of the Maccabees broke out and the Hashmonaim were able to push back much of this Hellenistic influence on Klal Yisrael, at least for a period of time. The Yom Tov of Chanukah focuses tremendously on the power of the bayis, because where are we told that we have to light the menorah? Mitzvah Chanukah ner ish ubeisa. Right, the mitzvah of Chanukah is to light the menorah in your bayis, in your house. That has a lot of ramifications, right? A person has to light the Chanukah menorah in the place where they are living, or at the very least where they're staying. Although we light the Chanukah menorah in shul, people are not yotzei; they don't fulfill their obligation with that. You don't live in the shul. You go out to a wedding during Chanukah, sometimes they'll light the menorah during the wedding. I mean, that's very nice, but the people are not yotzei with that Chanukah menorah lighting at the wedding. They have to go back to their bayis, to their house, and light the menorah there. Why? Because the menorah teaches us that the key to transmitting Torah to the next generation is making sure that the light of Torah fills your house. You can have the light of Torah at a wedding, you can have the light of Torah in shul, you can have the light of Torah in many, many places, but if the light of Torah is not in your house, in your bayis, you're not going to succeed in passing on Torah to the next generation. That's really the same thing Yossi ben Yoezer is saying. Yehi beischa beisvad l'chachamim. Your house, your bayis, has to be a place which is suffused with the light of Torah, with Talmidei Chachamim, with Svarim, that reflect the ideas of the great Talmidei Chacham of the previous generations. And then, and only then, do we stand a chance at being able to pass on Torah to the next generation. I think next week I'm ready to be on. It's still Erev Chanukah. We can do a pre-Chanukah shir if we're so inclined. Probably the week following that, which is actually Chanukah, we'll have Chanukah break, so everybody can go out and eat their latkes. I want to thank Mrs. Weil on behalf of the entire group. Okay, Shakaya, thank you very, very much. It's appreciated. And we will meet next week, Be'ezus Hashem. We should have a Lichtiger Erev Chanukah. Next week, yes. Yes. And the following week, no.